Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are back on live with our admin portion of our regularly scheduled commission meeting on May 18th. It is about a little after 11 a.m. And we have a couple items on the consent agenda, and I move passage of those items.
Second.
Oh, we don't have Daryl. Vic, can you go get Daryl? Can I call for a vote, Alana? Or?
Sure, you can call for a vote.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. We will move on to
discussion
matters of the commission. We have six items to discuss here. And we can just start with the number one, which is the participation in 811 Day at the State Fair. Stacy's on tap for this.
Yeah. As you recall, ND1 Call sponsored an 811 Day at the State Fair last year that we participated in. It's a one-day event where we set up our booth, and they have a bunch of other companies in there, and it was a really great day. Ryan contacted me and let me know that this year they will be doing it again on July 29th up at the State Fair. So I just wanted to make sure that you guys are on board with my participation again. It's a Friday, I believe, July 29th. And if I could take one other person with me, that would be great.
I thought it was worthwhile last year. You thought it was worthwhile too?
I thought it was really good. Yeah, rather than, you know, in the past where we spent more days there, we only went the one day, but it was focused, and it was focused on a topic. And ND1 Call did a really good job of promoting it. They had the news and views broadcasting live from right in the tent, so there was media coverage there. And yeah, I thought it was just a really good day. They were doing demonstrations throughout the day. The locators would show how they do their locates. And so, it was good.
How do we, how does the PSC have a presence? Like, how do people make the connection to PSC?
We set up our booth.
Oh, you have our booth set up.
Yep, and we hand out our materials. Good. So we handed out our brochures and our cups and our pens and everything.
Good.
Last year. So, yeah, we have our booth right in the tent with everybody else.
I think it's great.
Yeah, and we do not have to pay a vendor fee like the other people do. They waive that for us, so it would just be travel costs for one day. So some mileage and per diem.
I'm in favor of it.
Be the only cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm good, too.
I also got a note from Kevin Archer, who's head of the One Call Group, and they offered up that any PSC people that want to ride with them in their parade float, we're welcome to do that as well, too. So that's, I don't know where the parade is, but we're welcome to do that.
Oh, the State Fair Parade? Is it at the
State Fair? Yeah. The State Fair Parade, the Call for You Dig guys and gals are going to have a float, so we're welcome to go with them.
Cool. Do they supply the candy?
I'm sure they will.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Stacy. Second is the Sakakawea Pipeline. This is my portfolio, but Commissioner Kalk wanted to add it to the agenda because there is a draft order. Do you all have copies of the draft order?
Yes, I do, ma'am. And you laid it. I just put it on the agenda just because I wanted to.
I think it's good.
Just to do a quick through. I didn't know we'd have a draft order before this, and I had some questions on it, but I had a chance to review the draft, and I don't need a work session or any more discussion, but I'll do whatever you and your Randy want to do. I'm okay with.
Well, I have a little bit of just a slightly tweaked number 43. So really the issue here is number 43 is the one. Oof, I'm going to cover that.
Is there a Norwegian joke there somewhere?
Oh, I'm sure there are. the issue is the interveners filed a request to withhold the decision on this matter until we get more information on the contractors and the contractors' capabilities from the company. And so I've worked with Julie and Zach and talked through this last week and came to the agreement with them that we don't really have any jurisdiction over contractor selection. It's not one of our requirements or criteria. But we do have ongoing jurisdiction over the companies and to ensure that the lines are constructed based on the requirements of our order and the certification document and that they're operated the same as well. And so I think that number 43 basically provides that statement and kind of concludes the matter in that way. And so if you guys don't have any additional issues on this and how that's stated or any other issues on the draft order, then I think we can go ahead and move ahead without a work session.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just appreciate staff and you getting this together because keep these things moving, so thank you. Okay. I don't know if you want to have a special meeting at the end of our meeting later today. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with anything. We have a couple 3 weeks till our next meeting. I don't know that we want to wait that long. So I'm open to a special meeting today if you want.
Okay. I'll talk to staff and folks here at the end of this, and we'll decide if that's something that we should move ahead. Julie is the person who's carried this, and she's not here today.
Even tomorrow. We're all here tomorrow, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
Just so you know, I'm fine with moving it along, too, on a special meeting.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Damage prevention penalties, number 3, Victor.
So we had Northern Excavating last year. We found several violations for them, totaling about $19,000. At some point during the process, I think we had heard that he was expecting to file bankruptcy, and so we hadn't taken any further action on those cases, even though he hasn't paid the penalties. Jack and I were looking at it, and I did a last kind of checkup on the company. He's never filed for bankruptcy, so we can still go after him for these penalties. I did some checking. The state has 4 vendors that we use for collection services. Each of them charge different percentages based on what they have to do. But from what I've found thus far, I don't think it would cost the PSC budget anything to turn this over for collection. They would take their cut from whatever they were able to collect, if they were able to collect anything from this guy, and they would just reduce the remittance by their fee.
Victor and I and Jack had a robust discussion about this the other day, and I said we certainly need to bring this to the full commission, but it's a nice step forward, because I don't like just having that fine out there with us not doing anything on it, especially for this dollar amount. And we did look at the other legal remedies, but it just seemed like that would not bear any more fruit than what we've already done. The collection agency, since they were state approved, if you will, it would show a prudent step for us to turn this to the collections and then see whatever happens. But Jack asked me in our discussion, so does this become standard policy? And I said, no, I don't think so. I said, I think in this case, let's see how this goes, and we'll use this as a learning tool. And, you know, if someone doesn't pay the state $200 or $500, it's a different case than if somebody has a $19,000 judgment out there. So
is there a fee? Is the fee based on successful collection,
or
is there a flat fee no matter what, whether
a
dollar is collected?
So we don't pay anything if they don't collect anything.
Okay.
If they collect whatever amount they collect, they take their percentage off of. And there's a percentage for if they don't have to do any litigation services as a result of it, and there's a higher percentage if they have to litigate. And that just kind of means getting civil judgments in district court. Not sure if they would have to or not in this case. And like I said, there's 4 different companies. The one I had started speaking with has the lowest percentage of the 4. They would take 12.84% for non-litigated and 21.84% for litigated.
Before we go too far, though, what I told Vic is that let's see what the commission thinks, and then you would put together a recommendation, and we would then have a motion on it. But before he did all that work, just to see where everyone was at with the concept. And then what you're talking about, I think, would be your rationale for whatever you recommend.
I'm curious why there's 4 state-approved. Do we have to bid between them?
No, we don't. I've spoke to state procurement. We just select whichever one we would like. We sign an addendum to the state contract with that vendor that specifies the scope of work, you know, which items they're going to collect on our behalf and at what percentages. And we sign it. We give them a copy so that they're aware of it, and that is all. Yeah, I mean, we can do bidding if you would prefer, but it seems like they've done that with they got this percentage.
Do some of the four appear like they focus on one type of collections and some on other types? What do you use to base a decision on? I mean, if it's just price, everybody would choose the same one.
That's kind of my thought as well. The one I reached out to just to kind of get a start for, you know, what kind of information can you guys give me? They did have a presentation they had given to the state tax department for doing some of their collections. I'm not sure if they were successful and have their business now, but they have a reputable sounding name.
Well, that was one of the
things.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that the fact that they've worked with the tax department, there's some credibility, I think, there, that they've worked with other state agencies. And so we picked one that had done some work for the state, and I thought it was a nice recommendation, and it shows that we're continuing to follow through on this.
Well, I presume the procurement people checked into all four of these before they were deemed approved.
Right. Right. There's you know, obviously there's hundreds and probably thousands of collection agencies out there in the U.S., and they selected these four out of those. So there was certainly some sort of vetting process I'm sure they went through to get to this list.
Well, I think it's a good approach. It's worth a try and see how it goes.
So if you agree, what I can do is reach out to the I can reach out to more than one, but I have been just going with the one that's, and it's considerably lower. So this one is 12.84% for non-litigation. The others are 14, 15, and 20%. For litigated, this one is 21.84. The others are 25, 34, and 35%. So it's by a considerable margin. They're lower. So I guess what I can do is give them the specifics of this and see if they can give me, you know, if there's any more of a quote that they can say this would or would not have to be litigated, and we think we would be or wouldn't be successful. And then, you know, we'd have that addendum. I'm not sure if one of you would have to sign or if someone from the department could sign.
Well, that was a question that Jack and I kind of left hanging, that we're not sure what, other than this here for the three of us, if there needs to be a motion that I move, we do something. We hadn't quite closed the loop on that yet.
Right, right.
So, Milana, what are you thinking? I heard you say something there.
Well, I think if you're going to turn it over to collection agency and you don't have like a standard policy where you turn everything over, I think you'd have a motion that you're turning it over to the collection agency. As far as signing, I think it's similar to like IT has some standard state contracts and stuff. I'm not sure who signs those, but we'll figure that out.
Okay. But I, for Randy and Julie, I didn't want to make this a standard policy. I thought we'd just do this a one-time occurrence and see how it goes.
Yep.
Sure. I think so. There isn't a huge amount of risk since we don't have to pay anything if there's no dollar collected. And so, I mean, it might make sense to make it a standard policy depending on what the level of the fine is. But
yep.
I think we should try it and see from there.
And the company I spoke to, they definitely sounded eager to earn business. So they're going to make an example out of this if they can and try to show us how good they can do so they can get more business from us.
So when we would sign with someone like that, do we turn over authority to them, or does the state turn over authority to them to negotiate something? I mean, if someone owes $10,000, can they enter into a settlement agreement for a certain percentage of it?
I guess we'd have to. Yeah,
I think Randy, what I picked up on in my discussion was that if they come back to us and say, "Here's $200," that's what we take, because we've now it's whatever they can collect, that's what we get. So we could get back $20, we could get back $18,000. So that's one of the points where I wouldn't want to make a standard operating procedure, because if it comes back that they can bring us back $50, well. So the answer, I think, to your question is yes. We turned over to them whatever they can recoup, we take.
That would be the risk if they settle too easily and someone questions us, well, you had this big assessment and then settled for a tiny fraction of it and never did anything with the rest. But
right. Well, and I think
you got to try something.
No, I think that's a fair point. But when you look at the cost, the other legal route would cost us anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000, and we still have no guarantee of getting any money back because it doesn't add any more teeth than what we've already done. So I think this is a very prudent step.
Do we have any say in their tactics?
Well, that's a question too.
For all of this is going to be in the contract somewhere. All of, and I haven't read it. Jack probably has, but that's got to be in the contract somewhere, because the state has decided how do they want their bills collected.
Right.
And there are state laws with certain parameters about what you may and may not, well, federal and state laws may and may not do. So they can't violate any of those. Now, they might try to, but then you'd know if there were complaints filed against them. So a lot of that, I think we need to do a little more homework with procurement and some other people that have used them and reading the contract to answer some of these more detailed questions. Yeah. And I don't know anything yet, but I'll look into it.
Okay. Those things, those three things I think are good steps. Talk to somebody else who's used them.
Yep.
Look at the contract and whatever you said. The third one. Yeah.
Was and I don't remember, but it might be that the more expensive ones like have better tactics. So you don't know. You have to look into it further than just money.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Then we're all on board with that. Number four, Mark Tours, route information.
Well, to my esteemed colleagues, Stacy and I got a meeting tomorrow with the bus gurus, and I know Randy said that, well, you go to the barn and take a left and then go up here. They need a little more detailed information on the route for their drivers so they can give us the cost, and so we kind of need the route.
I have mine right in an email. Don't look at the times, though, because they'll give you a heart attack because they have us leaving at 8 a.m.
Okay.
So I'm working with them to adjust the schedule, but yes, I have the route that I can email you. Okay?
Rancher?
Perfect.
Should we talk to somebody?
I'll get it figured out. I mean, it would seem like my tour offers a nice availability to take two different routes coming and going. However, one of them is under some road construction. I don't know how extensive that is, so I should check into that to see if that's somewhere we'd want to send a bus.
I don't know that we have to have the exact stuff to
I think they just need kind of like a mileage estimate.
Yeah,
like,
you could just give us a guesstimate for tomorrow so they can know whether they're driving 200 miles or 800 miles. That's an extreme example, but just to kind of get a feel for what they're doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do.
If I forget, it's about 85 each way.
Well, that's good enough.
I can get it more precise.
I think they want to know where they're going, though. Because I think he puts together like the drivers at some point are going to need an itinerary. This is where I'm going type thing. But
Randy can't
that's
just
a start
by him and direct.
I think they like to know beforehand in case they have to go looking for one of their drivers.
I like flexibility.
All right. North Dakota One Call Bill Draft.
I can go, Vic, if you want to make it quicker.
Sure. That sounds bigger.
This is going to be on the admin agenda every week,
session. No, we're putting this to bed now. Where there's a bill draft that's floating around. Vic gave him some general thoughts, and I gave him some general thoughts, and I said, but here's the way this works, is that the commission will wait until the bills are officially filed, and then when the bills are filed, we'll look at if it's a you know, must affect or whatever, and I said, it will affect us, and we'll have a commission position on it, so... I just want to let you know that there's going to be a bill draft coming, and we provided some general thoughts, but not PSC positions. And this next Tuesday at 1 o'clock is the hearing in front of Senator Triplett's where Carly is going to give the bill draft to them, and I don't know who's going to sponsor the bill, but at this point, once it gets filed, we're going to stay out of it until we get into the legislative process is where we're at.
We meaning the PSC.
Well, we meaning Victor and I. But we meaning we're not going any farther because they're trying to get us boxed into the PSC. What do you think? And I'm saying, in general, we agree with this. And in general, we participated, and we're backing off now. That's what I told John right downstairs. And so that's kind of where we're at.
But I don't think it hurts. I mean, if you see something as it continues to evolve that's problematic for us, I don't think it hurts to point that out to them.
Well, I get a little leery pointing out too far because without talking to the two of you, it can quickly develop the PSC supports something or doesn't support something.
Yeah.
So they changed the board of directors.
Yeah, they added one. Their recommendation is to add one from the large pipeline. And that's one that I've told them personally I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be no resistance for it. But as these things develop lives of their own, I mean, I just don't want to be in too early saying we support this I just don't think that's the way it should work.
I think so far, like at least the position I've taken with them is, you know, do you realize this is what this could do more so than we think this is how the world should look, you know?
They are looking for technical expertise, and they always are. So if there's any, like, glaring errors, you know.
So they're taking out the 48 hours?
Point them out.
They're redefining it.
Right. They're making it so that it's actually more than 48 hours in most cases.
Do they say, where does it get to how long it needs to be?
It goes.
Something where it starts at midnight of the day they put it in and you got 48 hours.
H3, item 12.
Page 3. I see. And then they took it out later. Okay.
Yep. And it's just referred to as locate.
I see.
Period. It kind of makes it easier because there were issues with the way the law was written. It would refer to location notice or excavation notice, which is it the same thing or two different things?
And the only thing, every time they do this stuff and make it a little harder, it entices more people to do what the one that we dealt with earlier in our meeting did and just claim it's an emergency and go about their business. Now it's basically 3 days instead of two.
Pretty much.
Well, that's one of those perfect examples that we've made that point clearly. This is what that group wants to do, and then when the time comes for the hearing, then we'll go down and say that. Because I don't agree with everything that's in there, and we've made our arguments in some of this stuff.
All right.
The vision I guess I tried to provide to them is, okay, that sounds like a great idea for everybody to do that. Well, what do I do when someone doesn't?
But I wanted to bring it to the agenda just so you guys know that I'm backing off now until we get to the actual.
So, and the alternative would have been to try to get it the way we wanted. So is there going to be any pushback in the legislature when we show up and say we don't agree with X, Y, and Z of this bill? Why didn't you guys get involved or not? Why didn't you work on it through the bill draft process and get it? Why are you coming here now? Or is it better to just, okay, we've said what we can, you guys go forward and we'll tackle it during the session? I don't know exactly what those things are in here. Maybe they aren't that big of a deal. Maybe
an example would be that
items.
I think that there's nothing in there that I saw that I have 100% heartburn with. Like, I'd have been fine with them just leaving the 48 hours the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to change it. Okay, right? It's kind of like...
Okay, so it's nothing really big.
There's nothing in there that I would say that... For example, there was some in there about mandatory fines. And I told them, I said, well, if you guys put mandatory fines in there, that's fine. But me personally, I'll take that to the mat when it comes to the legislative hearings. I can't speak for my colleagues, but that one, I definitely take that down. And so that came out pretty quick. So we have expressed some of those kind of things. The part about the adding a group to the large pipeline person, there was all kinds of debate about that. I didn't understand why at all. And so there may be some pushback from that, but I don't know why.
Yeah. I think it was primarily the current board pushback.
And then there was some discussion about should they report out to someone. I mean, we could go through a lot of the – there was probably – I don't know, 30 different, 40 different things we started with, and we whittled it down to what, maybe 6 or 8 changes? That 6 or 8, everyone that was there committed to no major heartburn to. Maybe I think is a better way to say to answer your question, Julie, that I told them, for me personally, that there's nothing in here that I have big heartburn with.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that we may not, as a commission, look at it a little bit.
Right.
Everything looked pretty reasonable.
And my thought is, too, this is likely to change. This may not even be the version that we see next week in that discussion downstairs. Last week at the One Call Board meeting, Carly was there with the One Call Board and kind of reviewed this. They made changes in that meeting to this document. So,
all right. Sounds good. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
You too, Andy.
If our views have kind of been expressed that we're not necessarily endorsing this, I mean, we can't be involved in everything as it's laid out. Every time some contractors have a meeting, the companies with the facilities, you know, whoever, then we have to have a special meeting to sit down and respond to it. That just would become impossible, really.
Yeah.
But I will say again, as far as extending that time out, you know, something goes wrong. Now you've got a problem. You want to get at it. And you probably usually find out during the day, presuming it's in the middle of the day somewhere. You call it in. Currently 2 days you can do it. Now it's 3 days until you can do it.
But the flip side, though,
it starts turning people off from yeah. following the rule. And
well, but the flip side, though, is you came out of West River. I mean, those guys and gals are doing all kinds of locates, and they've got work days, too, that, you know, that was some of their one, is that companies should be able to plan better than that. And they stop operation and have to go out there. That was the kind of discussion that took place there. The telephone guys were ones that were like, hey, listen, we need that extra time. So, I mean, that was the pushback on the other side of it.
One company's failure to plan shouldn't result in another company's emergency. You know. Yeah.
But that was the discussion that took place on both those sides.
Okay. Thank you, Victor. And number six, NST Express Pipeline landowner waiver regarding topsoil subsoil segregation requirements. This just came in yesterday afternoon. Do we have anything to look at, Pat? Yet?
We do not.
Okay. So do you want to go ahead and give the background on this one, Patrick?
Sure. NST is getting ready to begin their construction, actually has started construction, in particular, you know, some of the topsoil removal. And when they got out there, there was a landowner that said, no, I don't want you to do it that way. And they're following our order, where you would you remove topsoil.
Segregate it.
First, and then if you're going to put subsoil over on top of top, first you have to remove any topsoil that you're going to put subsoil on top of, and then have it segregated from, have the two segregated, the topsoil from the subsoil. And this particular landowner, and I guess there might be a potential for another landowner that wants them to just dig a trench, just like the 3-foot trench, whatever they need to put the pipeline in, and not to worry even about topsoil, subsoil segregation. Just dig that trench. Don't clear off any other portion of the land next to it. And he indicated that when the land agent was out, they had spoke about it, and the land agent said, yeah, well, you know, we can do that, but they didn't put it in the easement. And so the question is whether the commission is willing to provide a waiver for this landowner in this situation, a waiver from our order that requires the contractor to do the topsoil, subsoil removal in the way that we specify.
So what I suggested to Pat as just a starting point for consideration, and they are out there constructing, so it's not something we can really drag our feet on real long, but is if the company were to draft up a waiver and, you know, so that we could see it, and if the landowner then would be signing off on the, you know, restoration of grass and some of the reclamation components that would probably be challenged by this type of construction. So they're signing off so that then they can't come back to us and hold us, you know, ask us to then enforce with the company that they get this stuff done to the standards of the permit that we have. And so I just don't know if that's a reasonable process for this or if we even should be waiving such things, but it was just a starting point to look at and get us thinking about how we would deal with this.
I'll tell you two dilemmas I see with it. One is that then a few years down the road, we just had a case where an intervener talked about a poor reclamation job that he'd seen a contractor do years before, and he goes hunting down there and he sees this poor job, and so it taints, and people talk like that, and it kind of uses a broad brush and paints an industry as doing a poor job when, in fact, a landowner chose to have them do it different than than what was advised. The second thing is, if we, the flip side to that is, I like to respect those landowners' wishes, and if they think there's a better way, just do a poor job on a small narrow tract, and it's better than having a wide area disrupted and a questionable restoration job. I guess I can understand their wishes, and I probably would be willing to go along with a waiver, but not if the company is paying them to do the waiver. I do not like instances where a company says, rather than reclaim it, we'll give you X number of dollars, and then, you know, the landowner takes it and the next generation lives with it.
Right.
But if with no money transacted to entice that, if the landowner wants to do it a different way, I probably don't have strong objections, but I sure would want to see a waiver signed by them that makes it clear that they're choosing a different alternative than is recommended, and understanding that then
the results are going to be different.
You know, the ag commissioner, I can't remember what you call that new program they have where
mediation.
Yeah.
The ombudsman
program. There's nothing they can really do about it then if you've told the company to do it a different way.
Yeah.
Pat, can you walk through the technical side again? How long a stretch a property?
I don't know how long the stretch is.
Well, I think I'd like to know how long. Is it 1 mile? Is it 16 miles? How long is it?
Okay.
And I know we're time crane. I hear what you're saying.
Right.
There.
No, and I mean, we got it. It's a...
But this, then the next thing is, okay, so I'm feeling the I'm not understanding. Okay, so the normal trench width is going to be the same size trench width, right? For the pipe, 3 feet?
Sure, but you're wondering where all the other topsoil removal comes from?
Yeah, I'm missing
okay,
something.
Okay, so if you dig in a trench to put your pipe in,
yep.
You take the topsoil out and you put that off to the side.
On one side?
Yep, but now you have the subsoil that you're going to dig.
Put on the other side?
But you can't put it on top of topsoil.
I understand, so you put it on two sides of the pipeline. That's normally what you see out there.
But you have to strip away the top. Where you're going to place that subsoil, you would strip away the topsoil first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that you're not putting subsoil on top of topsoil.
So it becomes a broader, it becomes much more than 3 feet by the time they do all of that.
What Plus, does it become?
Then they do the pipe laying pad, right? They usually strip off some additional area for working space.
That is the wide area.
Yeah.
And if it's only 3 feet, apparently this landowner would be having them do all their driving and stuff on top of the topsoil.
Right.
On grass,
whatever.
Yeah.
And after, like, if the company does strip the topsoil off of a wider swath, they'll try to do their work on top of subsoil instead of on top of topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
And the width that they're looking at, they have a 100-foot easement, but they're trying to keep it down to, like, 60 to 65 feet wide.
And then what would this bring it down to here?
If you just did the trench.
20 feet?
The trench itself would probably be, you know, 3 to 4 feet.
No, but what would be the footprint? Because you're still going to have to put the topsoil, subsoil mix somewhere, and you're still going to have the equipment running down the other side. So we go from 60 feet to what by doing this?
But they wouldn't be clearing that other stuff, according
to
the landowner.
They didn't clear it all. They were just driving. I guess it would depend
just
on the situation.
The width of the trench?
Right, but I have to draw. Okay, so corridor. So normally they'd take off all this topsoil here, and they
yep.
put all the subsoil here, right?
Yes.
And then they put the topsoil all on top of that. And but how wide is this normally, and how much more narrow will this be now because of that? And if it's the same size, then I don't like it. If it's significantly smaller, but I don't know that they're – yes, I get that they're going to save a little bit of – they're not going to take the topsoil, but
okay.
What dimension are they reducing the footprint?
So if you let's say you dig in just a trench, okay. Where on your diagram, where would you put that soil? Okay,
to the left, let's say.
Well, wherever you put it. And then there you have to have room for the equipment to drive.
On the right side, probably.
So they would be driving on top of grass and, yep, and topsoil there. So how much did we narrow it to?
That's my question, is I don't know what you really save by doing this, because, yes, you're going to save stripping the topsoil as you put the subsoil on it. I get that step. But I don't know what distance of impact you're really reducing by doing it this way. If they can do it all in 60 feet, this is not going to be 40 feet just because you do this.
The landowner believes it's that the impact is reduced to 3 feet.
So he's thinking it's going to be this, Brian. 3 feet, trench.
I understand that.
The soil gets piled over here on top of what's already there.
Yep.
And they drive and operate over here.
Right.
So this stuff gets beat up, but it's not excavated. So
only
this
one
is
side. Right. But you're still this side is still impacted no matter what.
And but so you're not excavating side. It. You're just piling it on top of what's already there. But it's impacted. But in the landowner's mind, it's not excavated. It's not stripped. So it goes from 60 feet to 3.
No, it doesn't work that way, because this side is impacted no matter what. It goes from 60 feet to maybe 40 feet.
It's not excavated.
It's impacted, but not excavated.
I get that. I'm talking impacted. So you're really, the amount of soil impacted is not that much different. I get excavated.
He's objecting to the excavation of it. That's what he doesn't want, is the 60-foot come through, plow up 60 foot of my land, and then have to put it all back together. Apparently, in his mind, he thinks, so if you drive on it, that grass will come back. If you pile the soil on top and push it back on, it's going to sift out, and over time, it'll be the way it was.
The company's approach would be an amendment to the easement, is what we're understanding. We were hoping to see that as that amendment, some language that we could look at. But the company is going to want the landowner to give them a waiver for reclamation that they're not going to be able to do when it's all done. Because, like the rutting in the grassland, they're not going to be able to reclaim that without digging up the grassland, if
right.
That's what he's trying to avoid. And there's a potential that they won't be able to go in and do the reclamation even over on the trench. But the company is going to figure out what the amendment needs to say. And we were hoping to see that, but we didn't get it in time.
I'm kind of like, I mean, I'm definitely like Randy in terms of I want to honor what the landowners want to do. But also I think part of our obligation under siting is to look long term. And I think about, you know, in the area of coal, would a landowner be able to opt out of the coal reclamation standards and say, we don't want to do this?
No, but the huge difference is the federal statute and state statute, that it makes like a huge difference. It's not a discretionary thing with the commission.
Okay.
So they wouldn't be able to opt out. They can opt out of certain things, not everything. But there's laws mm-hmm. that guarantee it, and we don't have as much of that in siting.
Yeah.
It's more discretion. And we have to worry about taking of the private property of the landowner also. So the easement is the way to go, because the landowner is exercising his rights over his property.
So in your view of our jurisdiction, if the landowner wants to do it this way, that's fine?
I think we'd probably have to make an accommodation to some extent in the certifications going forward. Haven't had time to figure
okay.
that out totally. Talked to Jack a little bit about it before he left. And to Pat. But
is there anything we would have to do right now to allow this to happen?
Not
with
if
our
the,
order?
Well, not.
Just change the
condition
of the order. It's no different than anything else.
Yeah.
You can't just make it magically happen.
Yeah. But yeah. The easement would go a long way for it to magically happen while we were getting the change done.
Right.
And we have received an email now from Molly Smith that evidently has a document attached.
Okay.
You know, there is a. In the certification proceeding, there is language in there that lets a landowner request a different seed mixture
if
it's approved by the commission. And so it would seem like that, though it's in a different paragraph, that's kind of concept.
That's the same concept, and it's just one we just overlooked, but it's a good point to tweak again.
But, Pat, you can make clear to the company that I personally would look very negatively on anything that even had a hint that they're paying people to get them to do some other form of reclamation.
Well,
I don't want to get into that thing. It costs a lot to reclaim this land, and I don't want them to be able to put out some sum of money less than that in order to not have to do it.
Yeah, but that's the stink of this whole thing, Rancher, is that we have no jurisdiction to tell them what they can or can't pay, and we have no ability to follow through on it.
I think they already will contract with landowners to do their own reclamation, but it doesn't resolve them from the obligation that it gets done.
Oh, but I do think that this could open the door. If the companies know that they can go to the landowner and get some other kind of reclamation work, maybe minimal or maybe something else, it opens the door for easement.
Well, I'm taking a counter position to my colleagues here on this. I didn't know how long it is, and I need to think about the order announcement. If it's in the certification, whatever, you can't just do it. It's got to be, I would think it has to be noticed for a hearing. It's a change to the order. It's not as easy as, I understand the time constraints, but this is a Pandora's box that I would like to think through some more.
Yeah, it is a big deal, and I mean, it's one of those things where it's one thing to pick a different seed mix. It's another thing to not segregate topsoil and subsoil and make it impossible in the future to grow anything on that.
It's also not only for the debatable quality of that ag land in the future, but if it turns out that grass doesn't grow well because of whatever decision was made, and then we get a hard rain and that erodes out and the pipe breaks, then we have bigger problems. So, you know, having good reclamation is not only for the landowner's convenience, it's for the safety of everyone.
That's where I was trying to go with the discussion about if there is impact reduced and how you would quantify, okay, why are we doing this? A, the landowner wants it, but they've been able to reduce this footprint because it sets up the stage for the future discussion that's better to do it this way because the landowner feels it's better. And in the future then, well, it's better to do it that way, so that's now what we're going to do in every case. It's a slippery slope.
Well, and that's why I thought it started with having a really clear explanation about what the downsides of this possibility are that the landowner would be signing off on. And, you know, maybe once the landowner sees that maybe that might change their mind a little bit or have them thinking about some of the possible negative outcomes of the 3-foot trench, and that's it.
The landowner did indicate that he would certainly be looking over that amendment carefully and considering it.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to find out how long this is.
Okay.
It's a whole different story if it's a half mile or if it's 20 miles.
Yeah, agreed. Okay. And then what Pat said is there's a neighbor who, if it, you know, then they might want to do
it
this way too.
Of course. That's exactly what will happen. It'll be the slippery slope. Well, Bill will talk to them at the coffee shop and say, well, I think it's better. And there's no – that's what will become the standard. And then even if we do this, we can't just do it. They would think there has to be a notice. There has to be someone to intervene. We have all kinds of people come in these pipeline cases that are heck bent for leather about make sure we do the proper remediation, that it's not their land, but they're sticking their nose in on how it should be remediated. And so that's the kind of stuff that we should be thinking about.
Well, and you got to balance that with what Alana was saying about what our limitations on our authority are for telling landowners what they can and cannot do with their land.
Well, then why even have siting? Because then you could just say, as long as they've got an easement to the landowner, we don't care. Because if you've got a landowner that's willing to not have any conditions and they sign off on it, then what's the point of siting? So I would offer that there's a conflict in the law as the non-attorney.
Well, the notice is what fixes that, and this is the kind of thing that you wish you heard about at the hearing.
There you go. So we do the notice. That offers
covers that notice. If landowners realize this is impacting where my topsoil's going and what's being stripped and all of that, I mean, that's the – and that should merge with the easement. And those two things should fit perfectly together, and obviously they haven't here. But maybe the landowner, I mean, maybe another conversation with the landowner will clarify some of this.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking maybe they'll come to their senses to some extent.
And I really do think the company should be, you know, sharpening their pencil, too, on that minimum. You know, what's the absolute? Because we've heard about 30 feet at times through wooded areas and in around the Dakota Skipper and, you know, in certain sensitive areas where they shrink it much further than 60. So why can't they shrink it even more, still keep the high standards of, you know, segregating the topsoil and subsoil and doing it that way, but not having it be the 60 feet, maybe it can be 30 feet. And then the landowner might be encouraged to go along with that so that the reclamation can be done the way we know leads to the best possible result.
And even on the range, maybe there's a horizontal drill. I know it costs more, but they're going to be having a way of doing construction going down this, and they're going to stop and then switch to a whole other methodology for some distance and then go back to the old methodology. I mean, it just seems screwy. So if it's smaller, maybe the horizontal drill. I mean, there's other options that are available. But I just don't like where this is going.
Well, let's start with what we've got. I mean, we've got the starting point with the easement, potential easement tweak, and then the landowner discussion. And Pat, we'll just have to stay in touch. Are we all here the rest of this week? I am.
I'm not here Friday. I'll leave.
But you could always call in for something like this.
I think
so.
That
we could always do
it. I have to call in if we do something on Friday too. I'm here tomorrow though.
Okay.
The question though is, there has to be a notice. So, okay.
I think so.
So then maybe
there
that's where...
There might be some catch loopholes there somewhere, I don't know, in the certification or in the order. I don't know, without reading it.
I'm trying to remember this pipeline general. I don't remember where it's at.
I don't either.
So we don't
I get them all mixed together.
Pat, do you remember where this pipeline is in general, the length of it and all that?
No. We'll get that information
to you. Is it generally in McKenzie County, though? Or... it's somewhere up there in the heart of the oil patch, right?
Yes.
Stacy, you could probably pull it up on the website because we did a hearing on this one.
Case number, I have that.
I am not against doing this if we follow the process. We do a notice on it, and we have a rationale. The company makes a recommendation as to why they think it's right, and then people get their chance to say it. I'm not against it if we follow the process.
A month.
So I'll just close with that thought.
Well, yeah, I think we just, it's a good initial discussion. We got some follow-up to do, and then we'll touch back in a couple, you know, when we get more information.
Also,
okay.
If you do have us thinking about a special meeting, is there an opportunity to add anything to it?
Sure. I mean, that's the point about if there is time sensitivity. We talked about potentially as under special meeting. If we need to move, then we need to move,
yep.
My opinion.
I have something else, too.
Yeah, I'm
not
sure.
Related
you and Jerry.
Okay. So we're done with that one. And that concludes all the items on discussion matters. So now we move down to everybody's favorite, scheduling.
My iPad.
This reminds
phone.
Me of Ed Schaefer whenever we'd want to sit down and schedule things, he'd say, okay, now how are you going to ruin my life? Hand over your life to somebody else. And fill it.
So much for my daughter's graduation. So much
Okay, yes, review legislative. Okay, let's look at this list and see what's most time sensitive. These are all kind of just discussion things, no hearings, so that's good. Review legislative proposals. I wanted to set up a time again. It doesn't have to be any, maybe it could even be July or at some point to go through the list like we do all of us and the current drafts and that sort of thing.
You mean our legislative
proposals? Ours, yep. Ours, our commissions. Any thoughts on if you want to go sooner than July?
I've got some opportunities those last couple weeks in June if you wanted to go sooner, but.
December. They'll change.
Late. What are you thinking, Brian?
Well, I think that we're going to have a lot of budget discussion and all that through June and maybe maybe here July. July. I mean, I'm not against June, but I just think that
we've got budget and reviews and salary decisions and all of that sort of stuff to do in June.
Good point.
So I think I was thinking July we might be done with some of that.
Hopefully.
So what about like the week of the 11th?
It's the telecom thing in Fargo, the 11th through the 13th, and I'm around the 14th and the 15th off to Dallas for SPP stuff.
I'm around the 14th.
Okay.
On that note too, Randy, the Plaza Elevator's 100th anniversary is that day. And I ran into one of the guys who knows one of the guys, and they'd like a commissioner to come up there for their 100th.
Cool.
And I said, well, normally the commission will do a 100th certificate, and then whoever has a portfolio gets the first bite at it, so if you haven't, they haven't contacted you yet, ask Sue, because her and I ran into discussion about that. But
on the 14th of July?
Yes.
When their event is. Is that an evening thing? Or?
I don't know. I just thought of that. Cause
probably not real early. Maybe we could schedule something for like 10, and then we could switch it if you find out later.
Yeah, one thing about it, we'll be meeting again. It's not like we're doing this in the week.
Yeah.
we can alter this if it turns out.
Okay, so
problem.
Let's say July 14th at 10 a.m. for the review legislative proposals.
And then, Randy, is that cool if you check with Sue? Because I forgot to tell you that. They're thinking about Randy Christman Day in Plaza. It's kind of yard signs and everything.
Okay.
Do you want an hour or 2 hours?
1 hour. Hour and a half? Let's do an hour and a half.
And I will, Brian, follow up with Sue on that. And
thank you, sir.
I can't see any reason why I wouldn't be able to go up there.
Okay. Excellent. Reschedule IOU transmission discussion meeting.
Yeah, Jerry's got some conflicts, and I have some conflicts, and we've had more. We just keep moving this back, but I think it's okay because we keep having the discussion.
We had it on 6/21. Is that when we had it?
So I thought about even pushing this bugger into September.
Here. Oh, wait.
I thought of September 8th, 9th, 13th, or 14th.
I could do 8th in the morning.
Works for me.
Jerry, what day is your dialysis on? Is it Thursdays?
Tuesdays and Thursdays. What is the 8th?
It's a Thursday.
I have board meetings the 8th and the 9th.
How about 13th?
The afternoon
How about the 14th?
How about the 14th? That's a Wednesday.
Non-commission meeting Wednesday.
Sure, that works.
September 14th?
September 14th. Is this an all-day thing, or which one is this?
This would be just the 9 o'clock till 12 o'clock where the three IOUs come in.
Oh, IOUs, yeah. Okay.
That might be more time than we...
Might be.
Yeah.
Okay,
so September 14th, 9 to 12.
9 to 12, all right.
That worked, Jerry.
14. Director's meeting. What month are we looking for, Daryl?
We're looking for June.
We didn't do one this
month?
We
didn't do one for May, so if you want to look at May, too, I guess...
Well, let's see. We could do it early June. Do you want to do it before Mark, or are you too busy, Brian?
You know, before Mark might be good just to talk to the directors about the staff involvement and go into the thing at Heritage Center on Sunday. That would actually be pretty cool.
I wonder if we have an informal on the 8th scheduled at 1:30. Maybe we could turn that into director's meeting. We've got that time blocked off. Nothing. Okay, is that all right with everyone?
Sure.
Do the director's meeting at 1:30 on June 8th? Okay, and then, Daryl, can you look ahead and get some possible dates to get those kind of on the books and going more so we don't slip?
Okay.
All right. And then the PI meeting with Excel, June 22nd.
For some reason, there's no informal that day. Is that a misprint on the 22nd? Because the commission meeting in the morning.
Yeah.
Pardon, Esther? I just asked the question.
Okay, well, should we do it that afternoon? Is that
what
they were thinking?
That's what they're suggesting, Commissioner, is 1:30.
Okay.
Seems like we took that off for some reason. But
that's what I was thinking, like one of us had a conflict or something.
Okay, so.
Yeah, I don't have one that day. A conflict, that is.
I don't either. Well. Sure, fine to do it then.
We'll figure it out if it does. If it resurfaces, 1:30 to 3:30 on the June 22nd.
Just like I couldn't remember why I moved that May meeting until I had to be on a plane the next day.
Yeah. So on the special meeting, I don't remember if Sakakawea is in a urgent need for that permit.
I just bring it up because our next meeting isn't now until quite a ways. We are not until June 8th.
Okay, so I'll check with Pat, and we'll try to figure out if that's something that we should try to get on in the next day or two. If we were to do a special meeting, what time do you want to do that?
How about tomorrow after the work session?
That's fine.
It's getting kind of late, but we'd have it done.
Can we do it before the work session?
Yeah.
I
have the League Night Research Council. Remember that thing?
Yeah.
It's not on you guys' account. Yeah, until 3.
Yeah, that won't work for me tomorrow. I won't be able to do that.
But I probably could in the morning. I just don't know if we're going to know much more by tomorrow morning already than we do now.
This is for the pipeline, though, not for the... If you're trying to merge those
specials. What about Monday?
I'm free all
afternoon.
That's
when I'm in...
Kingston, Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee.
And are you traveling that day?
I'm traveling back on Tuesday.
Are you traveling on Monday, though, or are you leaving on Sunday?
No, I'm leaving on Sunday.
So would you be available from your hotel room or something Monday morning?
I maybe could. I haven't really looked at that schedule because I just knew I was out there all day. I just have no idea what the schedule is other than I'm on Monday.
Okay, you don't know what time?
No.
When I was down there, it's a pretty small group, and so it might be hard to slip out discreetly there because there's going to be about 50 people there, and they all have all good presentations. But Tuesday morning, the Petroleum Council, I'm busy in the afternoon, but the morning, I've got nothing.
Okay. On the 24th? Yeah, me too.
Well, they are going to be calling in from airports, so I'm going to have to go to my...
Okay. Well, we'll figure out if they need one first, and then we'll go from there, and how quickly, okay?
It looks like I would have time, like a 3.5-hour layover in Atlanta from 11:30 to 3, but I'm sure that's Eastern time.
Yeah.
So it'd be like 10:30 to 2, so kind of somewhere over noon on Tuesday I probably could call in.
10:30, well, 11.
11 would be perfect.
11 would be better. On Tuesday.
Are you doing any petroleum panel councils? Petroleum council panels?
No.
I'm doing one on Tuesday at 1.
Cool. Okay, so Tuesday at 11 is a possibility for a special meeting. Okay. Okay, we'll get back and we'll figure out if that's needed. All right, I think anything else for scheduling? If not... 12:05.
We did it again.
We're adjourned.